Hello, everybody, and welcome to the new UK radio show. My name is Kevin Smith, and I have some things to share with you. Well, I simply couldn't resist adding a little further information about what I've mentioned now on two radio shows back to back. Some might say I'm getting a little fixated on this particular topic, and that my focus might conceivably be then more so on an aspect of knowledge or an insight, rather than on my awareness and recognition of the all is via my awareness. It was on the matter of protection, or lack thereof. Should one walk away from the new presentation and deny themselves the golden opportunity provided by the real universal guides to vacate the psych realm creational matrix of unparalleled nonsense and mayhem behind? I was going to leave it be, but maintaining my contention that returning to the personal little self and restricted little life held so dear by many is definitely an invitation to be assailed by the dark forces. But then I had a dream, a real side experience. And a very vivid one at that. The degree of vividness in a dream must be proportionate to the extent by which we must pay attention to it or heed its message. In the real side dream arena, the guides meticulously create sets and scenes for the purposes of becoming more aware, to see the restrictions that bind us, the attachments we cling to, and the tap lines, snares, and pitfalls we would do well to be aware of. A simple message or teeny gem of information can be contained within a dream. And it is our objective then to unearth and recognize what it is within the contents of a dream that demands our attention, perceiving beyond the literal self and unveiling the nugget of wisdom and sharings the guides have graciously provided. The guides have a tendency to blow a dream out of all proportions, to over-exaggerate it, so something that seems outrageously engaging or captivatingly engrossing in its magnitude, brilliance, and design may all be for the purpose of something very simple. Why do they do this? My personal self loves the adventures and the awe-inspiring nature of the exaggeration, but the guides are not catering to our personal selves generally. They will occasionally provide a dream for the personal self, with little to be gained in regards to our real awareness and the expansion into it, as the little personal self does like to let off steam after a hard week's slog. If you work in a job like me, sometimes a good dream or being taken to a place to release all that weekly tension is required. Also, it's imperative to get the little self on board. It needs encouragement, for it cannot understand or appreciate the magnitude of the potential that real awareness and ultimately a position in the real universes will entail. The personal self likes its thrills and spills and chases them unceasingly. Lest we get control of its wants and infatuations and focus it on the goal, the only reason we came into creation, to recognize our real intent, which is to leave creation and become one with the is. There is no sense trying to ignore the personal self. It's always there, moaning and nagging you, the real you, to chase that thrill over there, eat that taste overstimulating burger over here, and generally slob about and do very little for the benefit of anyone other than its little self. So, a few exciting escapades on the real side, provided by the guides, is just the medicine for a tetchy, moaning, personal self. As we drag our created bodies through the process, a little like Peter, my father, who will, on occasion, have exhilarating flying dreams. Yes, it is to afford him a better view, a demonstration of getting above everything, but also it keeps the little self, the personal self, motivated, almost tricking it into coming along for the ride, like convincing a child to see the boring museum by offering a reward of an ice cream afterwards. Also, the over-exaggerated nature of a real side experience will more likely have us pay heed to it. It's less likely to be dismissed and forgotten. The movies with the greatest impact will stay in our minds. If it's a demonstration regarding a health aspect of our personal vehicle we are overlooking, as an example, why not have us attacked by giant pizzas, or somebody shooting at us with a cannon that utilizes donuts instead of cannonballs? Anyway, you might be thinking, am I ever going to get back to the original theme of this topic, the whole protection thing? You've probably forgotten what it is I said initially. I know I have. Ah, yes. Losing protection that the connection to our real awareness affords, should we sever the connection and return to our personal lives only, and the likelihood of attack from the dark forces more so, because we represent always a potential troublemaker. We may elect at some stage to reignite our awareness and cause trouble again. So, were I the Callum God, I would proclaim, take that troublemaker out now, before he or she changes their mind and reconnects to the real awareness and becomes harder to remove as a result. So, I had a real side experience, a very vivid one, and as I was saying, the vivid dreams are the ones that demand our attention, as our real selves take pains to ensure that we do, facilitating our recollection of them and seizing our focus as much as the little self will allow. I was with all the new presentation new friends, as far as I could tell, recognizing the likes of Kelsey, Val, and so forth. We were all in what seemed to be a large broadcasting studio, monitors everywhere, every new friend transmitting their information and sharing globally the ears and the real guides. It surely was an impressive setup, and very gratifying to behold that such a grand operation was in effect, and the potential sharing of the ears would surely reach far and wide. But then something caused me grief, the nature of which I was uncertain of, but nevertheless I descended into a rage and stormed from the operational centre, deciding to leave, to throw in the towel, to go my own way. Rather strange, as I certainly was not entertaining such a notion prior to sleep. As I stomped grumpily down the studio corridors, the whole world seemed to shift, waver, and fluctuate, a little unsteadying. The impression was that something had overlapped this scene, something that was far from good. A sense of foreboding engulfed me, and then these reptilian creatures came hurtling toward me. They seized me, a reptoid on each arm, and frog-marched, or lizard-marched, I suppose would be more apt, me along the corridor. They were taking me to a wall, but I knew, maybe in sight from my real self, it was no wall. The overlap had temporarily allowed two creational realities to exist in one space, and that wall was some kind of crossover point, like a portal, and evidently to where these reptilians had emerged from. I struggled, I strained, but was inexorably dragged to the wall, and dragged through the wall. It was like an invisible membrane to a world or dimension or life level beyond, and I was now in the reptilian's realm, so I would assume it to be the lower astral. The scene switched now. I was somewhere else, a far more elated impression, removed from the reptilian clutches and their forbidding astral level. I was with new friends again, and this time also Dwayne was there. I was very relieved, and I would speak with Dwayne for a time. The words escape me, but the impressions were there. The entire experience had been a demonstration of exactly what I had suggested would occur if one disconnected from their real awareness. Their ability to deal with situations diminished as a result, and the opportunity seized for the Callum's minions to kidnap the troublemaker. For would I have been in my state of awareness, I would have known how to deal with any situation on the real side, at least far better than I did here in this dream. With the real awareness connection severed, all I had was the far more limited captain of the ship that is my personal self, with the only reference of recourse, that which it could access from memory, the mental vehicle. As a result, my personal little self simply struggled, but invariably this proved futile. My real self would have zapped them with fireballs, or clambered upon a flying griffin and escaped to safety. Then Dwayne, in the final scene, explained to me, through impressions, what the experience had been all about, and those impressions formed together on waking. So what was this demonstration all about? It wasn't a heads up, because I certainly wasn't intending to do anything other than proceed with my recognition of the is and embracing of my real awareness. It was a question being answered. You can pose any question, and on the real side it will be answered or revealed. As you sing the new you song before bed, hold the question in your mind and watch your dream experiences, for the answer will be revealed in the days, weeks to come, in your dreams or even on the physical level, as life and the guides operate effectively on both. Usually I don't ask questions. I tend to let the real side experiences unfold as they may. Safe in the knowledge, the guides, life, and my real self knows what is best for my awareness, and what I need to know, be shown, or suggested as a next step. However, the personal self does have a tendency to latch onto ideas, certain aspects, notions, and theories, even if we consciously don't realize it. Something may have been on our minds, reverberating around our mental vehicles, and if given enough focus, it will be more so. And even if we then dismiss these notions that have been bothering the little self, it's likely we will have an effect waiting for us somewhere down the road and around the corner. Incidentally, it was later on that the impression occurred to me that the reptilians in the experience were actually real universal guides. Often the guides will adopt roles and assume the forms of all manner of creatures and species for the purposes of providing the demonstrations and the sharings they wish to impress upon the individual. In my case, then, I entertained the notion of the dark forces coming for someone under the circumstances of returning to the personal self. Then I forgot all about it, but evidently the is does see everything, and a week later I had this experience, which was a validation of what I had surmised. In effect, I'd asked the question, and it was answered. So sometimes when we request information, it's clear to see that it won't always be answered immediately, but answered it will. And if you let the personal little self run amok with its ideas and funny notions, some of them would make no logical sense either, as the personal created self can have its distortions, its habitual, peculiar, irrational reactions to things that make no sense to the real self. But we have to deal with the personal self that we have created with all its quirks. But to continue to entertain certain created ideas and entertain habitual reactions will have us the constant effect of what we have caused in creation. Regardless of what we set in motion with our thoughts and emotions, be they good, bad, or just plain quirky, we experience the effects of them. Or, as in a mental vehicle case, the thoughts we play with, what puzzles or concerns us, may well be revealed or unveiled on the real side, even if we were not intending to ask it as a question. Nevertheless, it was quite the experience, and I was most relieved when I realized it was just a demonstration to answer a request for information I had evidently made, then forgotten about. Roll on with the process of becoming more aware, and keep those pesky reptilians at bay. For if they generally attack us on the real side, and we are connected with our real awareness, and allow it to take command of the situation, it knows exactly what to do, and so those abducting reptilians best run for the hills as far as their scaled limbs can carry them. Do you want to know one of the more frustrating aspects of real side dream experiences? I'm sure everyone, at some point, has experienced this phenomena. Imagine watching a movie, and it is a movie that demands attention due to its quality. And then imagine the movie had no sound. So obviously, integral aspects of the plot will be lost to a severe degree, and the whole overall experience lessened as a result. It is this that can also be frustratingly experienced on the real side. Generally, the dream experiences will have all the elements we require to glean the insights that are being provided. The scene, the individuals and their respective roles, the script and the dialogue. But on occasion, we may find ourselves with an individual who is in communication with us, and we know, without a doubt, this is someone we really need to pay attention to, and yet, we can't hear a word they are saying. These dreams are infrequent, but will occur, and usually they are with universal guides, and sometimes with Dwayne too. I've found that in these volume-lacking encounters, that naturally the inclination is to strain, to hear, and focus more so on what is being said. But the moment you try and do this, the scene and the individual you are struggling to hear will fade away, and you will be somewhere else and puzzling over why you could hear nothing. And what was indeed the point of such a conversation if it was unable to be received? Interestingly, when you fade from the scene with the guide, or whomever it may be, and you cease your struggling then to hear what words they utter, You may find yourself returning back to their presence. But your delight is soon dashed, as once again their lips are moving, but it's as though someone switched the mute button on their vocal cords. I have mentioned this on occasion on a few of the UK Skypes. Dwayne would inform me of the difficulty experienced with bringing dreams back through to the physical. And this is not only the recollection of them, but certain aspects of the content, such as the volume, it would seem. Evidently, our real selves heard and acknowledged everything that was said on whatever life level the dialogue took place, as much as it saw and experienced everything too. But the trick is to bring it back through to the personal little self, recollect it, and generally try to determine the demonstration through the obstructive filters of our literal created vehicles. Dwayne would refer to waking like a stone hitting the smooth clarity of the dream waters, distorting and obscuring the contents. And sometimes, depending on the personal self, it will block out a lot of the dream content, or maybe even the experience in its entirety. I have mentioned before how the trick is to maintain a state of being that is devoid of thought and emotion. In other words, that of being connected to your awareness on waking. In order to better facilitate dream recollection. So what about those pesky dreams where no words can be received? You remember the entire real side experience in crystal clarity, but were unable to bring back to the physical the words of undoubted wisdom that would be awareness expanding for yourself. Yes, it would seem that perhaps the little self has intervened and insisted that these words are not to be heard. Perhaps something beyond which it is willing to hear or accept at this stage. The personal self is very strong after millions of lifetimes and does have a tendency to interject itself on our process of becoming more aware, thinking it knows best, etc. But as time has gone by, I've come to appreciate the mechanics of interaction on the higher life levels and the real universes beyond the physical. On the physical level, everything is very dense, intense, tightly packed, and we utilize, of course, our senses to interact and engage with others. But beyond the physical level, everything is far more malleable and fluid, and everything moves by thought and imagination. Also, communication is more along the lines of telepathy on the life levels beyond the physical, and indeed encounters with individuals are not necessarily visual, but more impressions. It's a recognition of these life levels and the individuals you may find there. If this recognition and perceptual acuity is lacking and unpracticed, you will see nothing at all, or very little. And as I shared a little of my out-of-body astral projections and excursions of years gone by, how at first I was still attempting to perceive the astral with my physical eyes, and then my astral eyes would kick in. At first I would still be perceiving the physical world, the house from where I projected from, then a subtle shift in my perception, and my astral perception would allow me to see the astral level I was now in, and the house would fade away. It explains how ghosts, if very attached to the physical level, and are unpracticed in perception beyond it, or even haven't considered anything beyond it, adamant that nothing in fact exists beyond the planet they spent their lifetime upon, that when they pass on, they are, yes, on the astral level generally, but are unable to perceive it, and so they still see the physical level. They will assume they are still alive in some cases, and be rather perturbed when strangers seem to now be living in their homes. For yes, they will see everything still on the physical, but not in fact have the physical vehicle any more. They seem generally bound to a certain area, and generally this is the place that they have died. To move beyond it results in them also moving on to their next position. Interestingly, I found this with some of my astral excursions. It wasn't until I moved beyond my house and into the street that the physical level would fade away, and I'd be somewhere in the astral. Seems there is a boundary where the astral eyes will kick in automatically, were one to move beyond it from the place they projected from or passed over in, but not always the case either, as some individuals may be more stubborn in their beliefs to the extent that you could relocate them a zillion miles from their initial passing over point, and still they would perceive not a thing. So, if this applies to the eyes, in regards of what we can see or not, according to the extent by which we make the subtle perceptual shifts that are required to see the life levels we move through, then it follows it applies to all the senses. Beyond the physical, the senses of the physical body no longer apply. They no longer are available, and their function was only to decode the life level they are designed for and aligned with the physical. But it seems we are so attached to the senses that we still try to, at first, perceive the life levels beyond the physical with the physical senses we no longer have. But through imagination and intent, as the life levels beyond the physical respond more directly and instantaneously with these, we can still perceive the physical, despite not having the physical senses to do so, Such is the power of imagination and intent. So putting this all together, when we find ourselves in a scene with a guide and we can't hear them, it follows that we are still trying to discern their words with our physical ears, the way we are so accustomed to on the physical. And thus, when we strain harder to hear, to use our physical senses, to perceive a level beyond what the physical senses are designed to perceive, we focus so much on the physical level as a result that it takes us out of alignment with the life level we were on. And then we find ourselves elsewhere. I would suggest the astral if we are still in the dream, as it is the next rung up from the physical, and where most will be in their dreams or on passing over, if the focus has been predominantly on the physical life level up until that point. Then we stop focusing on our physical senses, we let go, and may find ourselves back again on the life level we had departed from. Now we have allowed ourselves to return. So we ultimately have to learn to read these life levels, to perceive and recognize them. And we can't utilize the literal self or the senses, try as we might. It's more impressions that can only be gleaned once the emotions and thoughts, the personal self, has been placed aside. In more recent times then, I can be with guides and individuals, and I am not actually visibly seeing them or audibly hearing them, and yet I knew who it was and I received the information they were divulging to me, all through impressions. You know you are in the company of someone through the impressions of that individual in your presence, and the unique quality of their essence, in effect, will allow their identity to be known. Then you become familiar with the impression of them, and you get to recognize individuals this way, as much as you would recognize an individual on the physical level through the senses. The real you knows how to do this. It's just getting the personal created self out of the way to allow such impression-based interaction to take place. So, as you can imagine, it's not a constant. While we have the personal vehicles and still are going through our process of becoming more aware, we switch back and forth between the various states of being. Our focus fluctuates until it is stabilized, and we become aware beings of real light, standing real and with the all is. I had an experience with Rebazaar a few weeks ago, just prior to waking. Again, I didn't see him visibly, but I knew it was him. He had his unique signature, and I had the impression of him. He was speaking to me. I heard no words, but the impression and sense of what he was conveying. And to reinforce the notion that this was a genuine encounter, which I think is important, not for the real self, but for the personal self more so, which needs encouragement, On waking, a large bird was cawing at my bedroom window. Again, I knew this was Rebazar. He was in the form of this large bird on the physical level. And then he took flight and flew away. Limitations and the way we are limited can surely be due to lack of awareness and our connection to our real selves that reside with the all is. The more we are immersed in our personal little selves only, that which we have created to experience the simulation that is the psych realms, the more we impose limitations upon ourselves. We restrict ourselves by only utilizing the far more limited facilities of the creational vehicles. They have a purpose and a design that is for the life levels they are created for. We do also have the imagination and the intuition, but generally these are very underutilized, and the system is literalized to the extent that this is made more so. The imagination is a far better tool to use than the mind, and a means to access the real universes, and the intuition, a step away from the real self and awareness. It only makes sense that the controllers will seek to suppress the use of these creational tools as a literalized, boxed-in slave species is far more manageable and less likely to get any notion of leaving the slave pits. So most, then, will simply employ the mind and emotions to navigate through life, to draw only on the references and information that has been attained this lifetime through the mental memory body. Without new references, new experiences, that only through the connection to one's real awareness and the real side, and guide-provided demonstrations and experiences that stem from it, we are doomed to cycle endlessly in perpetual circles of very limited ideas and considerations that pertain only to creation. And even what we draw from our causal vehicles will be the same repetitive references and stored emotional reactions, routines and patterns of behaviour. They serve as experiences and references, but without an influx of new experience and input, something fresh and for the literal self, even daunting as something it has never done before, then we will cycle endlessly and get nowhere, and tread water, as it were, to be forever a slave. What we agree to will have us limited, taplined, and restricted, if it is to an idea that doesn't reference the ears in any shape or form. And, of course, if we are solely literal, if we simply are emotional and mental, then the effects of this will be more unconscious lifetimes. Also, if what we decide and choose for ourselves is nothing but thrills and creation-orientated things, we are aligned and focused on creation only. With the knowledge of this, we can begin to see how to navigate through the snares. Sometimes the simplest and seemingly innocent of decisions we make, or ideas or choices, can have us taplined, limited and back for more lifetimes. I was recently considering doing a little jogging, as I hadn't done much by way of exercise for the longest time. We do have to maintain our vehicles, but not too much by way of focus on them and their upkeep, or our focus is diverted from our real intent, that of to recognize the is and connect with our real awareness. And I ran the idea through the "would the birds and animals do this?" checkpoint. And naturally, no, they would not. Animals would just do what they do, and not consider going for a jog, unless it was to run from the jaws of a bigger animal. And I wouldn't say it was a thrill to run either, so I wouldn't be engaging my emotional vehicle. In fact, I find exercise very boring. But I pondered nonetheless, what if I got chased by the controllers? It wouldn't do to attempt to flee and fall flat on my face, or run out of steam after a few yards. But I'm sure, if they really wanted to take someone out, they wouldn't be chasing them around, just zap them from afar, or something more sophisticated and along these technological lines. That night, however, I had a dream. I was on the real side, and with a group of people, and we were climbing up a fairly steep hill. I had the sense that the guides were with us and accompanying us on this endeavour. Halfway up the hill, I became extremely tired and had to take a breath. One of the individuals whom I felt was a guide gave me a look as though to say, "You see what these considerations can cause?" I understood his meaning, because I had been considering running so that I might better escape pursuers, should the need arise. And yes, this might be so on the physical level, possibly. But the limitation in regards to my mobility on the physical had followed me through to the real side. And this experience on the hill was a demonstration that something I hadn't considered up until now was now affecting me on the real side. And on the real side, one's physicality or running ability would have no bearing, as everything here is imagination and manipulation by thought, and the only limitations are those we decide for ourselves. In this case, my idea of jogging as a necessity had caused this self-imposed limitation on the real side, whereas this was never an issue before. Most people on the real side, or the life levels beyond the physical, will be self-limited in this way, for they have not grasped the fact that only on the physical are they constrained by the physical limitations of their physical vehicle. So many undoubtedly can and will be on life levels beyond, and in their dreams, and never do anything beyond which they can on the physical. And of course, the controllers are not about to tell them otherwise. Some people on the physical can, of course, manipulate even there through ethereal vehicle use, even though that will get them as stuck in creation as the overuse of any of the other vehicles. It's all really a question of what we choose as our boundaries and laws, and the higher the life levels we are on, the more we can express ourselves with far more freedom, and ultimately as a free being of light in the real universes, with no cause and effect ramifications. But you can see, then, how easy it is to latch onto an idea, and how the effects can be self-limiting, as in this case and dream. Now I have discarded the whole jogging notion, not that anything is negated, and certainly it can't be construed as a bad thing, but for me, the consideration of it being a necessity hamstringed me on the real side, as demonstrated. The real self always knows what to do, but if the personal self suddenly decides that certain things are essential for its survival, these things can cloud the ability to connect with the real self on our real side escapades. And instead of allowing the real self to take the reins and have us flying up a hill, we may have the literal personal self butting in and scaling the hill with the very mundane method of walking. And if we lean toward the personal self too much, it draws upon its reference of what happens with physical effort, that of getting tired. Whereas we really have no need to suffer fatigue on the real side. Interestingly, in some of my astral projections, before I found the new presentation, I would suffer fatigue and tiredness on the astral too, if I ran as an example, because then I had no connection to my real awareness, and so I drew upon the references in my personal memory and causal body, that of exertion equaling fatigue, and thus I made it so, everything responding to whim, imagination, and thought, etc. It reminded me a little of the Matrix movie, where Morpheus was sparring Neo in the Matrix. They were in the simulation, but fully aware, so could appreciate that it was just that. Nothing was real. And after needing to stop to regain his breath, Morpheus would inquire of Neo if that was air he was breathing there. We all do the things we do, and are restricted as we are, because we have decided individually and collectively that restriction, helped in no small way by the programming, dumbing down, and suppression and encouragement of limitation provided by our controllers. And the real side dreams continue to give us verifications and validations to provide answers to that which we ponder, and unveil the deceptions, snares, and deceits of individuals who, on the surface of the passing dream, appear very laudable, but in fact are not. As I said earlier, I rarely ask questions before I slip into the real side, as I sing the New You song. I generally let life and the guides share and demonstrate what they will, for often the questions we may have stem from the confused little personal self, as it tries to overanalyze, literalize, and fit what is experienced into the very limited and awareness-lacking perspective of what it has come to know and decide what it thinks life is. For a point may come where questions are no longer needed to be asked beyond the literal knowledge base that is needed as a foundation, and through the connection to the real awareness, it becomes then a seeing and a being state. We can be assured that everything is available in every new moment. Everything we need is right here and now. So what we can draw from this true reality depends on the extent that we can perceive it, and any questions, concerns, and ponderings beyond that are directly proportionate to the degree to which we are not connected to our real awareness. The personal, literal self will then seek to add ideas, questions, and queries onto what is pure and perfect, even though, absent of the personal self or one's focus on it, everything would be there in its entirety. And so, what would be needed in regards to additional information? This is then what prevents us from being in the new nowness of every new moment, and indeed standing real with the guides and the is, the extent to which we layer filters over it with our literal personal mind and emotions. As I was saying, even though I may not ask specific questions before sleep generally, often that which I have experienced on the physical, on the real side previously, or what I have written in prior radio shows or learned from various Skype sources, will emerge in some shape or form on the real side, by way of validation. This is happening fairly frequently these last several weeks, and I suspect it always has, but I was not making the correlation between the real side experiences and that which I had encountered maybe weeks earlier on the physical. I had written about how, depending on what we decide and choose as the attitudes we wish to cling on to or cultivate, dictates the species we may find ourselves in future lifetimes. That if our decided upon attitudes are along the lines and in alignment with a particular species more so than the species we currently are in, then we may well find ourselves a member of that species somewhere down the line. As we have learned, we can become reptilian due to our decisions. If what we do adversely affects individuals in regards to restricting them and robbing them of the opportunity to become more aware by deception, etc., as in Marjorie Klemp and other individuals who believe they are providing a benefit but are setting people up for taplining and unconscious future lifetimes. And this is borne out and witnessed on the real side, as the reptilians take them away. So it is apparent that from an awareness potentiality standpoint, a reptilian is a far less advantageous a species to find one's self in. If by our ill deeds and deceptive activities we find ourselves becoming one, the reptilians' created collective consciousness is far more oppressive and limiting for a reptilian to reach for their awareness then. Not impossible, however, but with their species being telepathic, far harder to secretly sing the new you and share it without the risk of discovery, and one would assume dire consequences. And so I would have a recent real side dream demonstration, one of a confirmational variety, that validated how being a reptilian was far more limiting than being a human in regards to the potential of becoming more aware. If one finds themselves as a reptilian, clearly the qualities, created literal selves, and decided upon attitudes, individually and collectively, are of such a nature as to be far more restricting and a stronger obscuring barrier between the personal self and the real self. The real self, the guides and life, will have a far harder time breaking through to a reptilian's personal self than a human's, we can presume. In my dream, this was demonstrated. I was with a group, as I invariably am on my real side escapades. We had donned battle armor, and our objective was to reach a location by fighting through hordes of individuals and creatures that stood in oppositional defiance to our target. My group were all human, but I found myself as a reptilian. Often we will have dreams where we do assume various forms and adopt all manner of vehicles of myriad species, as this allows us to better be objective, to perceive from the position of other species. This allows comparisons and the experience of wearing the vehicles and attitudes and personal literal overcoats of a multitude of species, that we better see how everything from what we are to what we have as personality, mind or emotion is just something we have added on top of what is pure and real. We see what the true reality, the is, by experiencing the vast array of everything that it is not, by having all these various viewpoints. In this case, the dream, I feel, was confirmation of the limited qualities of a reptilian in regards to becoming more aware in comparison with his human associates. Because what transpired was this: I would fall to the onslaught of the attackers, but every other member of the group, all of which were human, would proceed on, pushing further and ultimately succeeding. The goal we sought was clearly attainment of a real position with the is, recognition of it, and escape from creation. Creation demonstrated by the battle, not necessarily battling others, Although we do have to deal with the choices of others, the controllers who seek to suppress and hinder us, etc., but also the battle with the personal self. We have to work through our personal selves, and it seems if one finds themselves as a reptilian, their personal self is far harder to get through generally than a human's. And if a reptilian made inroads in getting through themselves, they'd likely take a step and position themselves perhaps in a species where the battle with the personal self wasn't as difficult, still having to be dealt with, but more manageable. So even though the controllers think they are having such fun in their minds, they are compounding their cause and effect karma and positioning themselves in future lifetimes in forms and with species that will further hamper their ability to connect with their real awareness, to the extent they can end up as swamp creatures, taking severe backward steps, which at some point or another they must work through again and painstakingly position themselves better to have even a glimpse at their real awareness. Or they may wind up in the phantom zone and effectively start all over again, as though they had only just emerged from the ears all those millions of lifetimes ago, and what a waste of all that experience. As we know, it's all in the comparison. To recognize what the true reality is, one must recognize what it is not, for it is invisible and has to be perceived, and it is very subtle. Something so subtle, and yet it is what all of creation stems from. The real universe is behind everything here in the psych realms, along with the real you that is behind and animating all of the five vehicles we have in these creational life levels. Little by little, we start to detach from what we have known, for everything we have known is simply a reference, and if utilized correctly, for nothing more than experience and comparison purposes. For to be with the is, to stand real in this golden, true reality, eventually then everything that we have ever constructed in our created personal selves, all that we are and have clung to, must be allowed to drift away, because all that we are, what we think in our literal minds that we are, is nothing but a creation, a construction, overlaying our real selves. As the process of becoming more aware continues, it seems we naturally will start to drop old, outdated ideas, attachments, and the references they represent will be required less and less, to grow dusty on the bookshelves of our causal and mental vehicles, until eventually we let them fade away. Sometimes we can't help but pick an old book from our causal mental library and carry it around with us again until we see sense and put it back with a shake of the awareness head. For wherever we are in our process always seems the most vibrant, the most alive. If we are in fact becoming gradually more aware and awake, and not withdrawing into ourselves again and backpedaling, if we do reach for an old reference, try to rekindle an old idea, it's never quite the same. We can never experience the vibrancy of the time in which that particular way of being was the pinnacle of what we had achieved awareness-wise. The idea that we try and re-establish will have an old dead feel about it, like tired old leaves, and even then we might still go back and reactivate an older, outdated way of being, but it will never have the same potency and poignancy as when we did it before. Having reached in any new moment the very best extent of awareness we can connect to, always will have the feel of riding a wave. I'm sure Dwayne will appreciate that analogy. And should we perhaps slip back into our personal selves, play with some old ideas, we can sense the subtle downshift. It will feel like we are less and diminished. We will fluctuate back and forth, but if our real intent is firm, always we will push the bar of awareness and establish a new position, a higher wave. And now, if we dip below the peak again, and even though the diminished position is what was the peak of perhaps a few months ago, it encompasses that feeling of being reduced. So always we waver, Morsey-related puns, between the peak of where we are in the new moment and a trough. But an acceptable trowel that isn't too bad should we hit it. In the knowledge, we, at our awareness best, can hit that peak again, assuming we continue on and don't keep allowing ourselves to diminish, or down and down we go, and make such a trowel as we end up in Davy Jones' locker. Effectively, we are dead then, dead in our awareness. The thing is, though, we need to keep pushing that bar, the awareness bar. We cannot tread water for long. We cannot stay between the new range of awareness from trough to peak we have established for ourselves, for the personal self gets bored and then starts to reach for those old books again to add something to its created consciousness. That is why we must always activate the real awareness. We must always seek to create something new, a project or activity that relates to the true reality and has the effect of connecting us more to it. And so we raise the bar again and create a new range to operate within. You kind of get to know when it's time to do something new. You sort of sense it, where you are, what you are doing, although it will still be a benefit to your real awareness and others, and should be maintained then, it begins to lose colour almost, become a little dulled. Then it is time to shake things up a bit, Time to launch that new activity, or the personal self will start to inject its funny notions and intercede with its personal related suggestions of things to undertake. Should this process continue to its conclusion, then one should expect to find themselves in the real universes of light and sound. With me, I get a nagging feeling if I have or am in the process of slipping back into an outdated routine or re-establishing an old idea or attachment. This I would put down to my real self, pointing out this awareness disconnecting decision, or perhaps a guide. Either way, throughout my life and even before the new presentation, if I would slip back to an older state of being, the nagging feelings I would receive. These I have come to recognize, and always then have steered me along. And inexorably, through all the spiritual paths and disciplines, that all, at the time, served their purpose for my awareness process, to inevitably finding the new presentation. And now, the real climb begins. The insurmountable mountain of recognizing the all is stands before me. Yet, should I heed my nagging feelings, should I get them, and continue with the process of activation and raising the bar, gauging the sense of the moment, its life and vibrancy, this will have me scaling ever upward, literally speaking, to the ultimate destination, or beingness. Sometimes I do play with old ideas, just to see how they feel, to get a taste of how dull and lifeless they are. I embraced for one day an idea that at one point was very valid, but now is effectively dead in light of my awareness that I have, and that it clearly has nothing to do with. Life and the guides will always show us to what is real, demonstrations and assistance with our attachments and self-imposed restrictions, making us aware of them, and facilitating their removal if we so choose. Not only on the real side either, as on my day of old idea embracing, I felt my attention drawn to the pathway I was walking upon down the street. And I kept seeing bees crawling along, as though unable to fly, suggesting a restriction, diminishing the ability to take flight, an expression of greater freedom. When I realized the significance, for the guides having realized I was in a paying attention mode on the physical, may well have set up such a demonstration that I was able to grasp with my awareness. And then, a little further down the path, were bees in full flight, buzzing about as they do, as almost a confirmation, some very enthusiastically bouncing off of me, and one accompanied me for a stretch of my walk. At home, I would entertain the old idea yet a little longer, and the nagging feeling emerged, and also, every time I focused or considered the is or any of the activities, Skypes and associated new presentation references to it, I felt a large wall, almost like a heavy partition, slam between me and it. That surely was the final confirmation, and I would dismiss the old idea and the wall. Any more tangible, and I would have seen it dissolved. Were I on the real side, I may well have seen this wall in all its restricting actuality. It's fairly clear to my awareness the two different dimensions existing currently on this world and in creation. Certainly, there are endless subtle dimensions people are aligning themselves with, and living with their dementia, as Dwayne puts it, finding themselves in these dimensions. But most notably, those aligning themselves with the All Is, and this golden opportunity. And those remaining with the old created consciousness of their personal selves and decided upon creation. For if one does lean too much toward the personal self now, and old ideas, attachments, and the like, it's almost like a feeling of being out of sync occurs, being disaligned with your real awareness, that only having been connected with it can one experience the sense of how it is to be disconnected from it. It's a subtle shift, but it is there, and exemplified more so by the impression of the huge wall slamming down, which effectively partitioned the two dimensions, blocking my access to the new nowness, the is, which is here and now in creation, a mighty separating, segregating wall of my own construction, the architect of my own disconnect temporarily, and on the side and dimension of it that would have me stuck in creation for still further unconscious lifetimes, until I chose differently one decision and the wall was evaporated. Every moment being new, and we always decide moment to moment what we are aligning with, deciding and focusing upon. Either we focus on our little personal selves and stay one-dimensional and in creation, or we focus on the All Is and create a better position for ourselves, become a true being of real light, which is what we already are, if we allow it to be so. Everyone will, I'm sure, have their own unique impressions and nudges from the guides, life, and their real selves. And it's a case of recognizing them and what they represent, as like my nagging feelings, assisting us in our navigation through the psych realms, getting through our personal selves and all of creation, and becoming what we already are, standing as a real being of light with the guides and the is. And so, with that, I thank you all for listening, and I will look forward to speaking with you again in 2 weeks' time. And so I shall round off the show by singing the New You song. New